Hey, everybody, just a couple quick things before we get to this very special episode of Go Fact Yourself.
We'll be back for a live audience show with LAist / KPCC in Pasadena on Saturday, August 12th at 7 p.m. with special guests to be announced.
And our special mini episode with two of our listeners playing games will be available in our bonus content feed later this month.
And we're still waiting to hear from two of our listeners who won the opportunity to sit in on a Zoom recording. If you are Giovanni S. or Diana H., please contact us through our website, gofactyourpod.com, so we can get you scheduled.
That's it. And now here's Helen, and eventually, me.
Are you a real know-it-all? Do you annoy your family by shouting the answers while watching Jeopardy? Do you drive people crazy when you start a sentence with, well, actually? Well, guess what? You can go fact yourself. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Go Fact Yourself, the show where we quiz the smartest people we know and find out why they love what they love. I'm Helen Hong. And now, recording remotely from our homes in Los Angeles, here's our moderator, J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you so much, Helen. Wonderful to see you.
Nice to see you, J. Keith.
Now, some of our listeners will know that you had to miss a show a few episodes ago because you were ill, and people have been asking, how are you doing? Are you all better?
I am not all better. It's unbelievable. These baby daycare diseases just can't stop, won't stop. So when I missed the show, tragically, I had a respiratory infection, which has now become a sinus infection, which is an antibiotic resistant sinus infection that I've had for 4 weeks and counting.
Oh, no, that's terrible. I used to get sinus infections a few times a year, especially when I was traveling a lot. And yeah, there was nothing to do except take antibiotics. And if I couldn't do that, I don't know what I would have done. I would have just suffered.
I took the antibiotics. I took 10 days of antibiotics. I felt sort of better. And then I stopped the antibiotics and all my symptoms came back. So I have a super bug inside my face. Thank you. Thank you, baby.
Now, have you done the thing where they have you gotten scans and things where they stick cameras up you and all that stuff?
Yes. I got a CT scan of my sinuses. And, you know, the very complicated medical term was, you got mucus up there. And I was like, wow, wow, thank you.
How did that get there?
Thank you, modern medicine.
Yeah.
And so I actually have an appointment to see an ear, nose, and throat specialist tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he's going to stick a camera up my nose, which it doesn't sound like a fun time.
Yeah. I've done that once before, and I have one recommendation, if I may. Don't watch. I know you love seeing yourself on TV, but Helen...
Not in that way. I did not enjoy that. I like seeing my face, but not the inside of my face.
Not the inside of the face, yeah. All right, well, I'm sure I speak for all of our listeners when I say good luck with that, and we hope that you find a solution to that.
Thanks.
And for now, today on Go Fact Yourself, two guests will compete to answer questions about facts they know, facts they may not know, and frankly, facts they should know. Plus, we'll meet actual experts on two very different topics. And finally, we'll declare one of our guests the winner of today's show. Let's get started and meet today's guest. Helen, who is up first?
She is a comedian, actress, writer, and Yidinji woman. It's Steph Tisdell.
Hello, Steph Tisdell.
G'day. How you doing?
Very, very well. So nice to meet you. Well, let's start with what Helen said, calling you a Yidinji woman. Some of our listeners, especially in the States, might not know what that means. What does that mean?
I know. Have I inadvertently offended you? It sounds offensive somehow a little bit.
No, not at all. Aboriginal people in Australia, we all come from different nations. So there's about 500 nations that make up the Aboriginal population in Australia. And my nation is the Yidinji Nation. It's similar to like Cherokee or, you know, similar to saying something like that.
I was curious to read that you said that you were so scared to mention your heritage on stage in case it caused controversy when you first started. Why was that? And how did you get through that? Because obviously it's something you're very proud of and vocal about now.
I just had this real fear that I was going to cop racism or racist heckles, because that's kind of what Australia's like a bit.
Oh, no.
Yeah, especially when I started. Like, it's actually crazy how much things have changed in the last 10 years massively in Australia. Like, being an outspoken Aboriginal person does open you up to all sorts of conversations and opinions that people really shouldn't say or don't really know much about. But then I kind of realised that that was a perfect reason to talk about it, was, you know, because people don't know. And because of the fact that people are ignorant. So
yeah.
I just had to grow up and get over myself, really.
You've described the Yidinji people as the funniest race in the world. What did you mean by that?
I kind of feel like that about, like, First Nations people all over the world, right? Like, I mean, from what I know, because it's just that whole thing of, like, you know, you laugh at tragedy, I guess. Like, there are conversations that I can have with my own people that it's funny for us, and then you say it anywhere else, and everyone else is like, that is shocking. I cannot believe you just said that.
Helen is laughing in recognition.
Aghast.
Oh, my God. I mean, I went to a funeral recently, and we spent the whole funeral was, like, full of laughter, you know, because that's what you do. That's how you bond. And we just take the piss and kind of, I think that's kind of a like-for-like thing. Yeah.
You're also working to improve opportunities for Aboriginal performers in other ways. Tell us about this TV show that I saw that you're developing.
Basically, for blackfellas, and that's what we call ourselves in Australia, for blackfellas, like, there's just not a lot of opportunities because it's that whole thing of if you don't have enough representation, if you can't see yourself in those positions, then it's really hard to pursue them, especially if they're not standard courses. So I'm working on developing a show at the moment looking to train up Aboriginal stunt people. At the moment, there's a lot of Aboriginal content that's going on our screens and stuff like that. And there's very few stunties, like Aboriginal stunties in Australia.
Oh, wow. It's like, it's not something that I would automatically think to be like, oh, we need more representation in this area. But you're right. Like, if there is more TV and movies happening, like, there's always more stunt performers needed.
100%. Yeah. And I just love that you call them stunties.
Yeah.
Is the show actually is it like a competition show or you're just a docu-follow or you're just following, like?
We're still waiting on the final sign-off on it and final commissioning, but we've been developing it. It would be, I guess, half documentary, half reality.
Outstanding.
It's not a competition. I'll be hosting it and all of that sort of thing. It was my concept. I've written it, you know, all of that. I mean, it was funny because I was saying to them, I don't want to be doing these stunts. And they said, well, if you want to encourage others, maybe you're going to have to sometime. And I went,
so this really is self-preservation as well for you.
My God, I don't want to be jumping. I said, get one of these stunties to be my stuntie. Like, I don't want to be jumping off.
Well, we're so happy that you jumped into our show today. Thank you so much for joining us, Steph Tisdale.
Thank you.
Helen, against whom will Steph be competing?
He is a comedian and reality TV star, proud father, husband, and beer pie man. It's Andy Saunders.
Hello, Andy Saunders.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for choosing me.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's all about choice.
Excellent. Well, we talked about Steph's Aboriginal heritage. Helen mentioned yours. Did Helen get that pronunciation correct?
Yes, you did it absolutely perfect.
Oh, thank goodness, because I have never said that word before in my life.
I want you to use it every day for the next at least 5 years.
Believe me, now that I know I'm saying it correctly, I'm going to sandwich in it in like inappropriate moments. I'm going to be like,
anything with beer and pie, I'm in. So this is fantastic. Now, you and Steph have a lot in common, aside from being comedians with Aboriginal heritage. You two actually have worked together on different shows. Steph has called you a guide, a mentor, and an uncle. What is Steph like as a, I guess, follower and mentee and niece?
She is an amazing comedian. She's a great storyteller and she's awesome company. I heard Steph mentioning, you know, we laugh at struggle. Struggle is like how diamonds are made, and you sort of see the gold in all of the struggle, and that's why we laugh at our own struggle, because that's how we've survived. Mm-hmm. And we're the oldest surviving culture in history.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that's appropriate.
JK, no one's ever congratulated us for that. But we've finally got one, and it's good to have it.
And I'm sure from a white American, it means more than it possibly could from anyone else. You are known not just for your work in comedy, but for your work in reality TV. You and your wife, Deb, were on a wonderful show called The Block. And for American listeners who don't know, if I have it right, that's where couples compete against each other to renovate and style a home and then compete to sell it at the highest price.
The Block was hard. It was 104 days with no days off at an average of 20 hours physical labor a day.
Oh, my God.
What?
In the first 3 weeks, I lost 17 kilo. It was ridiculous. I remember on my pedometer, I went up and down scaffold in one day. It was 18 kilometers. It was huge. You know, safe to say it was physically very difficult. But
you're not allowed to have any help. Like you're doing all the drilling and the hammering and the everything yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, anything that we didn't need qualification for, like plumbing or electrical work.
Yeah.
We could do. And
that would be a very short season if they allowed regular people to do the electricity, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'd be first day, maybe second. But can I tell you something right now?
Please.
Great TV. Great yeah. TV.
It gets huge ratings. And I'm curious, what's it like being recognized from being on the block compared to being recognized for your comedy?
It was amazing. And, you know, your profile goes up, your ego goes up. I loved it because I love attention, you know, and your peripherals get bigger. Like, I can see you guys right now. My peripherals are huge.
And you just completely turned around and still was able to see us.
People say the darndest things. I use darndest because I know Americans understand that word. They come up to you and they say some pretty funny stuff. I remember I was in a cafe. I could see out of the corner of my eye, this guy noticed me, and I was like, yes, someone's going to have a conversation with me about me, my favorite subject. And they walked up to me, and before they got right to me, they said, hey, you look like the guy that, and I looked up and I interrupted him. I said, yeah, I'm the guy that's on the block. My name's Andy Saunders. Glad to meet you, mate. And he said, no, the guy that stole my bike. I was shocked. And I was like, hey, that's racial profiling. You know, are you suggesting we all look the same, blah, blah, blah. And he walked away with his tail between his legs and he apologized. And I felt sorry for him. But that's stuff you got to put up with as a black celebrity in this country. Anyway, I love that bike, but that's not the point.
Boom, bam, twist.
Not the point.
Not the point. That also led to your own design show that you and your wife do called Deb and Andy DNA of Design, which people can watch on YouTube. It's really cool. I recommend people check it out. You guys have a really nice eye and you work so well together.
It's all Deb. She's the design.
It's all
I bring the jokes.
Okay.
That's it.
We're so happy that you're bringing the jokes and everything else today. Thanks for being here, Andy Saunders.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Can I just butt in and say, Jay Keith and Helen,
yes.
Deb and Andy are the most beautiful couple in the world. Because that show, The Block, right, it's funny. They make them cry. Like, you know, they work them to the bone. I always, whenever I watch those shows, I go, oh, look, that's so fake. That's just for cameras. Mm-hmm. It's not. They are the most beautiful, loving couple you've ever come across.
You're so sweet.
You're
that's
so
lovely.
Sweet.
Yeah, we're going to cut that, but
you
that's
are.
Very, very nice of you to say. All right, Steph and Andy, we asked each of you to provide us with a few topics outside your field of work in which you feel you have some expertise. Steph, you said that you know and love orchids, parrots, and Dr. Phil. Okay. Whereas Andy, you said you know and love surfing, the movie Avatar, and time travel. Later on, we're going to ask each of you some in-depth trivia questions about one of those topics. But first, we're going to get your thoughts on something you might know nothing about. It's time to split some hairs with our What's the Difference round. We'll have one question for each of you, each worth up to 2 points. Now, if either of you gives an incorrect or incomplete answer, the other person has a chance to steal. Your topic today, pool cue. First up in pool cue is Steph. Steph, your question comes from a listener. Who is it, Helen?
I will let them tell you themselves because we have a listener recording. Listeners, if you'd like to submit a suggestion for our What's the Difference round, go to gofactyourpod.com and click on Get Involved. Okay, play it.
Hi, everyone. This is Abby Branch from Denver, Colorado. My question for What's the Difference is, while both have you use a cue, what's the difference between pool and billiards? Love the show. Thanks.
Oh, thank you so much, Abby. By the way, the question was also submitted by Randy Rogie. All right, Steph, you heard it. What is the difference between pool and billiards?
Billiards has bigger balls and bigger sticks, which is just how I like it.
All right. Okay, to each one's own. All right, we've got Steph's answer. We don't know yet if she's entirely correct. And if you don't think she's got it just right, you can steal anything you want to change or add.
Billiards has, you play on a larger table with less colors of the balls.
Okay.
On a pool table, it's a bit smaller, with all different colours, and each player gets a certain size ball. Like, you can have big circles on one ball and small circles on another ball in pool.
All right. Well, this segment is Behind the Eight Ball. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. The main differences in the standard games of pool and billiards are, wait for it, length, pockets, and balls. Because standard pool tables are shorter have 6 pockets and use 9 to 16 balls, depending on the game. Standard billiards tables are longer, have no pockets, and use only 3 balls. Also, billiards are a generic term for any game played on a table with cues and balls. And yes, I do like saying balls this often.
Balls. That's right. Now, pool tables can be converted into billiard tables with a conversion kit that blocks the holes or pockets with cushions, but it's not a perfect conversion because a tournament billiards table is 9 feet long and the most common pool table is 8 feet long. That's 8 with a capital E, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for podcast. Helen, how did our guest do?
I think I'm going to give Andy 1 point because you did get the difference in the table size. You did say pool tables are smaller.
Yep.
Unfortunately, it has nothing to do with the different colored balls. And Steph, I'm afraid the size of the balls has no bearing on this.
Yeah, because it's how you use them.
The size of the table.
Yeah, yeah, it is how, exactly. Thank you. As I've always said, it's how you
exactly.
use them.
Exactly.
All right, up next in pool queue is Andy. Andy, while you may wait in one in order to play at your local billiards parlor, what's the difference between standing in a queue of people and a line of people? A queue and a line of people.
Well, in a queue, it goes around and a little, like a little thing at the bottom.
Yes, like shaped like the letter Q, I think you're thinking.
Yeah, it's a weird formation to stand in, but it's fun because you get to talk to people on the other side of the queue. In a line, you can only talk to the person in front and behind.
All right. Well, that is an answer that we had from Andy, and yet we somehow don't know if he's exactly right. Steph, anything you'd like to change or add?
Oh, if you're in a line, you don't have to be waiting for something. If you're in a queue, you are waiting for something.
Ah, okay. Very good. All right, well, this segment needs to take its cue and exit. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judge's table for the facts.
Here are the facts. The main difference is where people are standing. Because in general, in North America, it's called a line. In just about every other part of the English-speaking world, like Australia, it's a queue. Of course, outside North America, line can be used for people who are lined up, but who are not necessarily waiting their turn, like in a soldier's military formation or in line dancing, or, ideally, in soldiers going line dancing.
Yes, we all would like to see that. That's right. Now, we do sort of use the term queue in North America. Places like airports and amusement parks have queuing areas where you zigzag in between queue posts and ropes, and a queue starts with a queue, which is next to P and stands for podcast. How did our guest do, Helen?
Okay, so 1 point for Steph, because Steph, you did say you don't have to necessarily be waiting for something in line, like in line dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 1 point for Steph.
All right, 1 point for Steph. So Helen, what's our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Steph Tisdell has 1 point and Andy Saunders has 1 point.
Very close
Yay.
Game. But those scores are bound to change as we move on to questions about topics our guests have chosen for themselves. That's all up ahead when we come back on Go Fact Yourself. I like beef. I don't eat fish.
I like fish. I don't eat beef.
Well, I like incredible deals and premium cuts.
I like premium cuts and incredible deals.
Helen, I just realized we can both get everything we want and nothing we don't thanks to our friends at ButcherBox.
Oh, yeah. And so can our listeners.
What an incredible epiphany we both just had. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust delivered right to your door.
ButcherBox offers curated and customized box plans. So no beef for me, no fish for Jake Heath. Plus, recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks included in every box.
I am still thinking about that incredible ribeye roast that I made for a dinner party earlier this year. I got everything I needed directly from ButcherBox. It was so easy and so delicious.
I'm still thinking about these, like, pre-packs of chicken breast with bone-in chicken breast that I used to make a really nice chicken soup,
Ooh.
You know, because a lot of you know that I've been ill, so I've been wanting chicken soup, and it's great.
Chicken soup for the soul and for the body. Hey, ButcherBox is giving us a special deal. Sign up today using code GOFACT to receive ground beef for a year.
Plus $20 off your first order.
That's 2 pounds of ground beef free in every box for a year.
Plus $20 off your first order. Did you hear me when I said that? $20 off your first order when you sign up at butcherbox.com/gofact and use code GOFACT.
And that's why we say
thank you, ButcherBox.
My fellow graduates, for 500 episodes, my podcast, The JV Club with Janet Varney, has gathered story after story of all the scandalous things we've done throughout our childhoods.
Wait, what's happening?
Stories like how Jamila Jamil survived a horrific house party and she was on crutches. Or how Hal Lublin learned a Shakespearean monologue in his pajamas.
This is not the speech we approve.
Without your love and life tragedies, there would be no podcast. In fact, I'll have an exclusive look at how Maggie Lawson's mom confronted her after a sneaky basement meetup with her crush.
Spill the tea, JV.
Security!
Listen to the JV Club with Janet Varney, Thursdays on Maximum Fun! Class of Forever!
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself with our guests, Steph Tisdell and Andy Saunders. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Steph, of your many interests, you told us that you know and love orchids, parrots, and Dr. Phil. Let's find out a little bit about each one of those first. Tell us what... I'm sorry. I just love that combination. I'm not mocking you. I just legitimately love that combination.
Oh, my God.
Let's find out a little bit more about each of those first. Tell us what orchids mean to you.
I fall into rabbit holes and go hard. Mm-hmm. And I went down this hardcore orchid rabbit hole when I accidentally fell into a YouTube video that was like 20 of the most interesting orchid species in the world. And I was like, I need to know everything about orchids right now.
Very cool. I love that enthusiasm. All right. And then tell us why it is that you know and love parrots.
I'm absolutely obsessed with parrots. I have two parrots. They're blue-fronted Amazons. I grew up with birds. My first family bird drowned in the toilet. That's a weird fact about me.
Yeah.
It's so bad, isn't it? Because we all loved that bird and my dad was so sad and had to tell us all about it. He made us all go into the bathroom and he's like, I just want to let you know we found Ronnie, but I don't know when it happened. And so he was there doing little compressions on it, blowing into it.
Oh, that's sweet.
Which is the sweetest thing.
Yeah.
And it was like, Dad, he's stiff. Like he's dead.
Yeah. Okay. But I just want to point out your current parrots are in great shape and are being loved. Okay, great.
They get so much love. They travel the country with me. I don't fly anywhere.
Oh, no kidding.
I just bought a bigger car so I can have their cage in the back.
Wow. Yeah.
All right, and then finally, Steph, you said that you know and love Dr. Phil.
It's real bad, man. Like, I am obsessed. I don't necessarily know if I think he's the best therapist, but he just has – he's just really entertaining to me. He's always just going like, today's going to be – a changing day in your life. He's always, he has so many phrases that just make me laugh. And I go, this, he just feels like a bit of a hillbilly from the South. And he's always saying that. I'm just an old country boy from the South.
According to a lot of bona fide therapists, they're like, yeah, he is a hillbilly and he doesn't know what he's talking about.
That's kind of why I started watching him, because again, on one of my weird YouTube deep dives, I saw somebody like exposing him and I was like, yes, I am here for it.
Well, to summarize, Steph, you said you know and love orchids, parrots, and Dr. Phil. Today we're going to quiz you about parrots.
Yay! That's my best known one.
Awesome. How would you describe the two parrots that you have? What's their personality like? Obviously, they're pretty patient if they can be in a car with you for hours at a time.
One of them is really mean, but he's actually not. He's just super bonded to me and really anxious. Mm-hmm. The other one is the sweetest bird in the entire world, but really clingy. And actually, my oldest parrot attacked my housemate yesterday, and she has to go to the doctor about it today because her whole finger swelled right up.
Yeesh. But that's... Well, we know if she needs compression, your dad is on the case.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic of parrots with an expert-level question worth up to 3 points. But before that, to let you show your love even more, here are 5 trivia questions about your topic, each worth 1 point. Now, if you want it, you're allowed a hint for any 2 of these 5 questions. Now, Andy, do listen closely, because if Steph answers incorrectly, you can steal. Andy, by the way, how much do you know about parrots?
So much.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see if Steph gives you a chance to show off that confident knowledge.
He made legit face for our listeners. His face was completely legit.
Legit face. That's a new movie coming out, isn't it?
Resting legit face. Here's question number one. Steph, from Peppa Pig to Pirates of the Caribbean to President Andrew Jackson, one name has become so associated with parrots that it's actually a dictionary definition for a parrot, whether it want a cracker or not. What is this name?
Polly?
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. You're on the board. Very nice. Fun fact, President Jackson's parrot's name was Paul, without the Y, and it holds the distinction of being the only parrot to be kicked out of a president's funeral for swearing. So far.
Amazing! So far. I love that it swore, because that meant that he taught it.
Yeah, you learned it somewhere. All right, here's question number two. At the beginning of Alfred Hitchcock's film The Birds, Rod Taylor's character buys a couple of parrots for his sister. This species of parrot is often sold in pairs, and when they are sold singly, they will often bond very strongly with their owners. What is the common name of these small, affectionate parrots?
Lovebirds.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. You are two for two. Fill in the joy. Fun fact, Rod Taylor's sister in The Birds was played by Veronica Cartwright, who talked about working on that movie on episode 28 of Go Fact Yourself. Also, Rod Taylor was from Australia.
Amazing.
Amazing. We've got a theme going by accident.
Well.
All right. Here's question number three. Like cuckoos, woodpeckers, and ospreys, parrots have zygodactyl feet. What is characteristic of zygodactyl feet which makes them different from the feet of other birds?
Is it that they have the back claw or curved nails?
Helen?
No, I'm afraid not.
No, I'm sorry. That is incorrect. Andy, with a chance to steal.
They have a toe that allows them to wear a pair of flip-flops.
Helen?
That's correct. No, it's not.
Well, no. No, it's not. You were sort of on the right track, Andy. They have two toes facing forward and two toes facing backward. That is what zygodactyl refers to. Two facing forward, two facing backward. Fun fact, that arrangement of two toes facing forward and two toes facing backward helps parrots get a firmer grip on a perch or apparently on Steph's housemate.
Or on a pair of Birkenstocks.
Or on a pair of Birkenstocks. Yes, but Birkenstocks are not what we would call flip-flops here, so maybe it's lost in translation. All right, no point there. Let's see if you can bounce back with question number four, Steph. You do still have your two hints available. According to National Geographic, there are more than 350 species of parrot, but which of the following is not one of them? Is it the orange-bellied parrot, the brown-winged parrot, the green-thighed parrot, the speckle-faced parrot, or the elegant parrot?
The hint, please.
Helen, how about that first hint?
The elegant parrot is a type of parrot.
Okay. The green-thighed parrot.
Helen, is it the green-thighed parrot?
It is not the green-thighed
parrot. No, I'm terribly sorry. Andy, with another chance to steal.
It has to be the speckled-faced parrot.
Helen, is it the speckled-faced parrot?
Does it have to be? No, it doesn't.
It does not. No, Andy, that legit face is betraying your answers.
I should have said it could be.
It could be, and yet it is not.
Is it the brown?
It was the brown-winged, the brown-winged parrot we made up.
I should have gone with my gut.
That's all right. Fun fact, the orange-bellied parrot is Australia's most endangered bird, with fewer than 50 of them known to be in the wild. Other species of parrot include the burrowing parrot, the bald parrot, and the blaze-winged parrot.
I want to know what makes the elegant parrot so elegant.
If you have to ask.
That's so cool. It's the supreme parrot as well.
There's a lot of great.
Really great names.
Finally, here's question number five. You do still have another hint available. Parrots live for a very long time. Although Guinness World Records certifies that a cockatoo in Chicago was the oldest parrot ever at age 83, the Sydney Morning Herald reported that a cockatoo in Australia named Cocky lived to what much riper old age? And we'll give it to you within five.
Can I take a hint?
All right, Helen, how about that second hint?
In kilometers, it's about the distance from Sydney to Morisset. In miles, it's about the distance from Los Angeles to San Diego.
It's over 100. I think it's like 105 or 102 or something like that.
Oh, we do need a specific answer, please.
Oh, sorry. Let's go 102.
Helen?
Are you sure you don't want to say 105?
I'm going to say 105.
Okay, then you're still not correct.
Damn it!
Oh, wow! Helen, I've never seen such...
I'm sorry.
I loved it. No, no. Andy, with another chance to steal.
Here we go. It's got to be 102.
Helen?
Also not correct. I'm sorry, Andy. Oh,
the double fake from Helen Hong.
How about this legit face, huh?
No, believe it or not, Cocky, according to the Sydney Morning Herald, lived to be 120 years old. 120 years old. Fun fact, Cocky lived from 1796 to 1916, much of it at the Seabreeze Hotel at Tom Ugly's Point, Blakehurst. He was known for his patter, including saying, "One at a time, gentlemen, please," when he was being harassed by other birds.
Oh my God, cute!
Yes, in case you're looking for something else to teach your birds. One at a time, gentlemen, please.
If I had a dollar for every time I've said that.
All right, Steph, that was a lot of fun, but now here is your expert-level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to discuss your response. Steph, Dr. Irene Pepperberg has written extensively about parrot behavior and psychology. The focus of much of her study was a particular bird who traveled with her from university to university and became the topic of her New York Times best-selling book. For up to 3 points, what was the bird's name, which was sort of an acronym of Dr. Pepperberg's work as an avian language experiment? Next, what species of parrot, native to countries like Uganda, Angola, and Cameroon, was he? And what was one of the 4 prestigious American universities where he lived?
Okay, that is Alex the Gray. Mm-hmm. He's an African gray. And, I think maybe was it Stanford? Did I see that he was... I've actually watched a little documentary about Alex the Grey, and I cried when he died.
Oh, no.
Yes, I'm going to go with Stanford?
Stanford University.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Helen is taking note of those answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Joining us tonight is an award-winning animal psychologist and behaviorist whose groundbreaking work includes a New York Times best-selling book. It's Dr. Irene Pepperberg.
Get out! There is no way.
Hello, Dr. Pepperberg.
Hi.
Oh, my God.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. This is like I'm fangirling. This is so weird. You taught him so many amazing things. And then I don't know if this is correct or not, but it was like you didn't have a great bond with him, or you felt like he would be like, no, I don't want to do that sort of thing. And then one time when you left, when he was with somebody else, he said, bye, I love you, or something, or come back, or something like that.
Oh.
Yeah, no, we did have a great bond, but he got to the point where he sometimes really just didn't want to do the trials. And he would give me all the wrong answers in a row.
In order to troll you, pretty much.
And so basically when he would do that, I would just say, I'm sorry, I'm leaving. You know, I wouldn't say anything. I would say, other than I basically say, okay, that's it, I'm leaving, and I, you know, walk away. And he'd give this little pathetic, I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
To get me to come back, yeah.
Do you miss him?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And did he live with you, or was it just, sorry, now this is just...
No, I love it.
I did bring him home once or twice, but, you know, he basically lived in the lab.
Well, let me give a little bit of background to some of our listeners who aren't as familiar with your work as Steph is. Not only are you this best-selling author, but you've published several important papers. You've received Guggenheim and Whitehall fellowships and, of course, many grants from the National Science Foundation. You've lectured all around the world, and obviously your work has made it as far as Australia. What I was so curious about is that when you first started working with whom we now know to be Alex the Parrot, you actually had several degrees in chemistry, including a doctorate in theoretical chemistry from Harvard. How did you go from that to studying animal behavior in psychology, especially in birds?
Well, I have birds as a hobby, mm-hmm. you know, as my pets. So I was very bonded to them, and they talked to me. And fast forward, I'm at Harvard, I'm getting my doctorate, and I realized that I really didn't like what I was doing. And there were two reasons. One was that in the 1970s, the computers we had were pretty pathetic. And I knew that what was taking me 7 years was probably going to, in the future, take, you know, somebody, I thought maybe 7 weeks. Of course, now it's probably, you know, 7 nanoseconds.
Right.
Just didn't see this as a good future. And second, in the 70s, the field was so incredibly sexist. Mm. The chances of my getting an actual professorship were nil. I mean, they just literally would say to us, well, there aren't any women that could, you know, get a professorship at Harvard. And I'm going like, you're training us, you're giving us PhDs. And you're saying we're not qualified? Mm. So in the middle of all this, I'm watching NOVA programs on BBC Horizon, seeing things on why do birds sing, and studies on the signing chimps, and on dolphins that were using, you know, basically vocalizations to communicate with humans. And I'm going like, wait a minute, why don't they use birds? Birds can talk. And that's, you know, that's what started me down the path.
It's so interesting because it seems so natural now to study birds and their cognition. But at the time, this was like a crazy idea. Tell us the response you got to your first grant request.
Yeah, my first grant proposal, they literally asked me what I was smoking.
No.
I mean, this is the National Science Foundation or National Institute of Health. 10-15 years later, I'm giving a talk and I mention this anecdote. And somebody raised their hand at the end of the talk and basically admits to having written that and apologizes.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Wow.
We actually became friends after that.
I actually wanted to ask you a question, if that's okay, Irene. Do you know, I follow a lot of parrots on social media and stuff because I am obsessed. Is it weird for you looking at that, knowing that you were the start of that? There's like, there's a bird that does with his trainer. He knows metal and plastic and paper and colors.
Apollo.
Yes, Apollo. Yes. How is it for you, like, when you see on social media people just being like, oh my God, look at this cute bird. You're like, man, I did that.
Yes, but, you know, it's just fun that people have been able to take my work and take it further or build on it or do different things. I mean, it's really exciting.
So how did you prove that parrots weren't just mimicking humans, but they actually had their own, I guess, what, cognition and ideas and vocabulary?
By doing tons and tons of studies where you eliminated very carefully the possibility of simply mimicking. Mm. You basically teach them things like, for example, colors and shapes and numbers and sizes. Mm-hmm. And then we would give Alex two objects and I'd say, you know, what's same? What's different? Things like that. And he couldn't do it unless he understood my question. And he had to have this repertoire to choose the appropriate answer.
Very cool. Well, you ended up naming a foundation after Alex. That's something that recently celebrated the 45-year anniversary of. Congratulations on that. I know that the Alex Foundation is there to support avian cognition and conservation. What kind of projects are happening there nowadays?
Well, we're working on something called inference by exclusion, which is figuring out where something is after you're given information about where it's not.
Is that sort of like object permanence that people talk about with children?
The simplest version is you have two cups, you show the animal that they're both empty. You put up a screen, you say, look, I'm hiding something under some cup. You know, they don't know which one is. You remove the screen, you show them, look, this one is empty, and they should go to the other one. Turns out that's incredibly too simple and we're up to something like four cups and whatever, but you get the idea. We're looking at optical illusions. We're doing a study. It's basically interesting. So we did a version of this. It's the shell game on steroids. You have like four little colored pom-poms and you cover them with four black little cups and then you start swapping them all around. And only after four swaps, you pick up one thing, you pick up another one, you say, find the yellow one.
Wow.
It's really, really hard. And Griffin, our other bird, Griffin basically outperformed Harvard undergraduates on all but four cups and four swaps.
What? No. Can Griffin do my taxes?
Yes. No, we can't do your taxes. But
I'm secretly hoping that Andy, your specialist thing is also parrots, just so that we can keep talking to Irene.
Now I do. Hey, you should collab with Steph and do parrot stunties.
Yes, parrot stunties. Yeah. Yeah. What's your opinion about taking a pair of parrots on a long road trips in a car in Australia?
If you can get away with it, fine. In the States, it's really hard to find hotels that...
I know all of them in Australia.
You know all the parrot-friendly hotels.
I absolutely do.
We'll definitely have to connect you two after the show. All right, well, let's get to the reason we brought Dr. Pepper here as far as our game is concerned. First, we want to know, what was that bird's name that someone named Dr. Irene Pepperberg had worked with and written about? Helen, what did Steph say?
Steph said Alex the Great.
And Dr. Pepperberg?
And that's correct, of course.
That is correct, of course, for the point. Very nice, Steph. Next, we wanted to know, what species of parrot was Alex? And Helen, what did Steph say?
Steph said an African gray.
And Dr. Pepperberg?
And that's correct.
That's correct as well, also known as a Congo gray, I believe. Finally, we wanted to know, what was one of the four prestigious American universities where Alex lived? Helen, what did Steph say?
Steph said Stanford University.
Never been in California.
Oh, I'm sorry. No point there. What were the universities where Alex got to spend time?
Purdue, Northwestern, Brandeis, and MIT.
Ah, okay.
University of Arizona, which was a fifth, actually, but yes.
Oh, okay.
I've only ever heard of MIT, so... Of those. So.
Well, Dr. Pepperberg, it's so wonderful to have you here. Steph, I know you've asked a bunch of questions. Is there anything else you'd like to ask or say to the doctor while we have her here?
I'm just so, so blown away by you. Thank you for doing what you do. Like, I've watched and read all about Alex because I love teaching. I train my birds every morning.
Oh, cool.
And it's my favorite thing. And they're so smart. And I'm just so glad that the world on a scientific level recognizes how smart they are. Because I get very excited. I always show people the documentary about Alex. And my birds are my entire life. And I just want to say thank you. And I can't believe that I get to meet you like this. So thank you so much for your yarns today.
Dr. Pepperberg, it's so wonderful that you joined us. If people want to find out more about you and the work you do, where can they do that?
AlexFoundation.org.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on the work you do, and thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Irene Pepperberg.
Thank you so much.
All right, Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Steph Tisdale has 5 points, and Andy Saunders has 1 point with a round of questions for Andy coming up.
That's right. We're going to talk with Andy about a topic he knows about. Plus, later, Steph and Andy will go head-to-head in our Fast Facts round, all to find a winner on Go Fact Yourself. Who wants unpalatable and unwholesome nutrition products in inconvenient formats? Not our listeners.
Nope. Soylent, the original food tech company, makes delicious and nutritious nutrition products in convenient formats.
The folks at Soylent don't think Soylent should replace all your meals. I mean, nutritionally it can, but they're focused more on the times when you just don't feel like you can cook. You know, like if you're hungover, you want to sleep in, or if you're struggling with a mental or physical health issue that prevents you from being able to cook.
Like having a toddler who gives you a new disease every week.
That is another fine example.
If you're looking to complete your food plan, check out Soylent Complete Energy. It's not your typical energy drink. It's a complete nutrition shake to fuel your mind and body. Formulated with a proprietary blend that has 15 grams of plant-based protein and 39 essential nutrients, a delicious way to keep you going throughout the day without sugar highs and lows.
You're going to love the rich and creamy, chocolatey goodness of their best-selling nutrient-packed complete meal. It's perfect for breakfast, lunch, or anytime you need a nutritious meal that's delicious.
I've had it. It's tasty. So go to Soylent.com/GoFact and use code GoFact to get 20% off your first order. That's Soylent.com/GoFact and use code GoFact for 20% off your first order.
You might hear a cricket behind me, but don't let that distract you from our saying,
Thank you, Soylent.
Parenting, it's hard, but don't worry, you're not alone. Belly up to the low bar with One Bad Mother and let us remind you that fine is good enough.
They want to climb on different things. And how am I supposed to keep them both from dying?
There is a right way to do this. And if I can figure out that right way, I'm going to be a good parent. So that is not a thing.
So join us each week and let us tell you that you are doing a good job. You can listen to One Bad Mother on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself with our guests, Steph Tisdale and Andy Saunders. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you so much, Helen. All right, Andy, of your many interests, you told us that you know and love surfing, the movie Avatar, and time travel. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First, tell us what you know and love about surfing.
I've been surfing pretty much all my life, and as a rapidly aging Aboriginal male, I love surfing because it gives me an overall exercise and, you know, it's a lot of cardio and strength and a lot of breathing exercises. It's an amazing sport. I love it.
All right, Andy, you also said that you know and love the movie Avatar.
I have to admit, it has a similar story as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And,
oh, okay.
And that's why I think Australia has such a short memory. Because I'll go in there and they'll say, I've never seen a story like it. It's amazing.
Right. And you're like, oh, hello. What about us?
Hey, are we chopped liver?
Yeah. Remember when we had a nice place and then you all came in and tried to chop it down? Remember? Very interesting. I hadn't considered that perspective. All right. And then finally, Andy, tell us what you know and love about time travel.
Not a thing. I just know that if I had a chance to get in that space and take advantage of it, mm-hmm. I'd love to go back. Like a lot of people want to go back and sort of eradicate the things that were really bad in history, like mm-hmm. Hitler, all of those types of things. But I'd love to be in places where people were trying things for the first time.
Oh, like what?
You know, like imagine the face someone had when they first ate pizza. Like, or they said, "Oi, Trevor, you got to come over to my house. Trev, this thing I made has got cheese on it. It's amazing."
Imagine somebody milking a cow. And they're like, oh
yeah.
Actually, maybe I'll drink that.
Yeah. Who drank it? Yeah. Right. These are the things. Right.
Let somebody else deal with Hitler. Yeah. All right. So, Andy, to summarize, you said you know and love surfing, the movie Avatar, and time travel. Today we want to quiz you about surfing.
Yes, that's what I know the most about.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. So where have you been able to surf in Australia?
Oh, look, I've surfed most of the east coast of Australia, mm-hmm. All the way up to sort of southeast Queensland, all the way down to maybe the Victorian border. Mm-hmm. My favourite place to surf is my own cultural country, which is Biripi country, and there's a right-hand point break called Saltwater Point. Mm-hmm. It's around about probably a three-minute drive from my house. And,
that's nice.
And when it works, it just works perfectly, and I just feel at home and I feel safe and close and connected to my country when I surf there.
That's so lovely. Just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic with our question worth up to 3 points. But before that, to let you show your love, here are 5 trivia questions about it, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a hint for any 2 of these 5 questions. Now, Steph, do listen closely, because if Andy answers incorrectly, you can steal. Steph, by the way, how much do you know about surfing?
Absolutely nothing. I'm terrified of the ocean.
Okay. Well, we appreciate your, we always appreciate ignorance in song.
I remember when I was I took a group of young kids to Byron Bay. It was for like a surf camp about surf retail, about surfboard making. When mm-hmm. I was working in education, and if I could be blunt, they're hippies up that way. They are really, really close to the earth, and they're loving, and they're open, and they're great. And this surf coach teacher said, "Oh, righto, so we're going to go out here and we're going to surf on these surfboards, and look, everyone watch each other. But listen, if," and he was really serious about this, he said, "if one of you are being attacked by a shark, don't keep it to yourself."
Sound advice.
So just try and visualize.
Yeah.
The bottom half of you is going like this, and your friends are going, "What's going on with you?" Nothing. You'll see.
All right. Helen is very much enjoying that anecdote.
Put that on stage, Eddie. That's hilarious.
We got to have Helen in the front row. That's great.
I'm sorry. It's so ridiculous.
All right, here's question number 1 about surfing. Andy, when you think surfing, it's understandable to think surf music, and even more understandable to think of one particular band whose hits included Surfin', Surfin' USA, Surfin' Safari, and Surfer Girl. What Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band is it?
It's the Beach Boys.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct for the point. Very good. Fun fact, we did an entire topic on surf music with guest Greg Barrett on episode 46 of Go Fact Yourself, and a topic on just the Beach Boys with guest Margaret Cho on episode 37. All right, here's question number 2. The longest running event in competitive surfing started in 1962 and is now known as the Rip Curl Pro Bells Beach. In what country does the Rip Curl Pro Bells Beach take place?
Well, it's not Africa. It's Australia.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Very good. Fun fact, Africa is not a country.
I was just
about All right, to number say 3. Fun fact, before becoming the Rip Curl Pro in 1973, it was known as the Easter Bells Classic because it was run on Easter. You're 2 for 2, Andy. Here's question number 3. Rip Curl is a famous surfing company whose products include surfboards. What is the word for a person who designs and builds surfboards?
Can I have a hint, please?
Helen, how about that first hint?
The Collins Dictionary defines this as a person or thing that shapes, as in, oh, they're in such good shape.
Ah, it's a surfboard shaper.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Excellent use of the hint. Fun fact, one of the most famous and influential shapers was Hobart Alter, whose nickname Hobie can be seen not just on surfboards, but on his famous Hobie catamaran sailboats.
That's a very cute name. I want to name my kid that, Hobie.
I like it as well. I approve. I know you were looking for my approval for what to name your child, and you've gotten it, Steph. Congrats.
I want to name my kid Shaper. No, I don't.
Shaper Hong. All right, Andy, here is question number 4. Surf culture in Australia is often traced back to a visit in 1914 by a record-holding swimmer from Hawaii. His demonstrations of surfing were so important that a statue of him now stands at Freshwater Lake in New South Wales. His first name was Duke. Spell his last name.
K-A-H-I-N-A-M-O-K-U.
Ellen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Very nicely done. I would not have said H, but that's because we're from the States. But yes, K-A-H or H-A-N-A-M-O-K-U. That, of course, is Duke Kahanamoku, who has that statue there. Fun fact, you will also find an iconic statue of Duke in Hawaii, which was dedicated just 4 years before the one in New South Wales. All right, Andy, here's question number 5. You still have a hint available. Whether you surf in Australia or anywhere else, you're going to have to use science. There are many forces at play when you're surfing. One is hydrodynamics, which has to do with how pressure is exerted on the board by moving water. The other has to do with how pressure is exerted on the board by water that is not moving. What is that force called?
Oh, I didn't know you were going to get sciencey, Jackie.
I'm sorry, you can't avoid science. I've tried most of my life.
I will take the hint, please, Helen.
Helen, how about that second hint?
As opposed to hydrodynamic, which is water in action, this force sounds like what happens if your water gets too clingy or doesn't get good TV reception.
Hydrostatic.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Yes. Very nice deducing, Andy. See, science can be fun. Fun fact, hydrodynamic forces are pretty much the same as aerodynamic forces, and what keeps a surfboard moving in the water while floating is similar to what keeps an airplane wing or a parrot's wing, Steph, floating on the air.
Okay.
All right, Andy, that was a lot of fun, but now here's your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to discuss your response. Andy, for many years, surfing was thought of as a sport only for men. But in 1957, Frederick Koner wrote a novel about a teenage girl who was introduced to surf culture and decides that it's not just for boys. That novel became a bestseller and was made into a film starring Sandra Dee, which itself was so popular that it led to numerous book, film, and television sequels, including one starring future Oscar winner Sally Field. Frederick Koner based his novel on his daughter Kathy, whose nickname appears in the title of all those properties, and who influenced several generations of surfers. So, for up to 3 points, what nickname given to Kathy by a fellow surfer was in the title of those books, movies, and TV shows? What Los Angeles area city, known for its beaches and waves, was where Kathy surfed? And what Australian, regarded as the most successful female surfer in history, also had that same nickname as Kathy?
Gidget.
Okay.
Was the name.
Okay. What was the Los Angeles city known for its beaches and waves where Kathy surfed?
Huntington Beach.
Huntington Beach. All right. And then the Australian regarded as the most successful female surfer in history who had the same nickname as Kathy.
There's either Lane Beachley or Steph Gilmore. I'm going to go Lane Beachley.
Helen is taking note of those answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Joining us tonight is the woman whose love of surfing as a teenager inspired novels, TV shows, movies, and champion surfers. It's the real Gidget, Kathy Zuckerman.
Hello, Kathy. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Oh, it's so wonderful for you to join us. Thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. I'm excited.
Helen, of course, introduced you as Kathy Zuckerman. You, of course, were born, though, as a Koner, your father, Frederick Koner. How did you get the nickname Gidget?
One of the boys at Malibu called me Gidget, but I didn't write it in my diary. I mean, I kept my diaries. Here's a picture of my diary pages. Oh. And I read all through the diaries, but I can't find Who called me Gidget? So you know what? It's you did.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Somehow many years ago, I ended up doing that. That's great.
Yes.
Your father's book was such a massive success. I'm not sure if people today understand what a big cultural impact that it had. What was it like as a teenager seeing your nickname Gidget and then some of your life and your vocabulary enter the pop culture like that?
I didn't even know what pop culture was at the time. But now I'm really jazzed about it. You know, people say, what's one of the expressions that you used? And I'd say, well, low tide at the boo, stay out of the soup, don't drop in on me.
Wow. Those came from you. Now, you bought your first surfboard from someone who became a famous shaper. That was Mike Doyle, I understand.
I bought my first surfboard from Mike Doyle for $35. He brought it over to my house in Messerschmitt.
My last three surfboards were, I think, $1,100 each.
Oh. Wow. How good of a surfer were you?
Oh, I was bitching.
Yes.
That's going into my vocabulary now.
But you stopped when you went to college. How come you set it aside?
Well, it was something I did as a teenager, you know, have to hang out somewhere. So they didn't have AA club meetings at the time. I went to the Boo. I called it Malibu the Boo, like every day that I possibly could. But then I went away to college. The movie Gidget with Sandra Dee and James Darren and Cliff Robertson came out in 1959. The summer of 1959, I went to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And somebody stole my surfboard. They borrowed my surfboard, and I never saw it again.
Oh, no.
Well, Kathy, you mentioned that you've been revisiting your diary pages. Are you working on a project that involves them?
I am. I'm working on a project with a writer named Ken Lezebnik. I work at the Duke restaurant named after Duke Hanamoku. And Ken was working at Pepperdine, came to visit me and said, I'm a writer, and I love to see those diary pages. It's been going on for a number of years now, but we're still working on them.
That's so cool. What's it like to revisit diary pages from when you were a teenager?
It's a lot of fun. Actually, my husband's also helping edit it. And he said, you're always in love. Is there ever a time when you weren't in love or he loves me?
And then you said, right now.
And I understand you actually found the entry from the first time you went surfing.
I did. You want me to read it to you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we'd love it.
Yes.
Please.
Dear Diary, it was June 24th, 1956. So how many years ago is that?
Wow.
Dear Diary, I didn't do too much but go to the beach. I didn't think I'd have fun, but I met Matt and he took me out on his surfboard. He let me catch the waves by myself. And once I fell off and the board went flying in the air, I didn't get hurt at all. He also rode the waves with me. And then I rode the board in alone. The surf hasn't been high at all. I hope Matt will take me surfing again. Yep.
Oh, wow. It's like a superhero origin story.
Yes.
but so much cuter.
Kathy, did you get much negative feedback from male surfers back in the time when you were surfing as one of the first female surfers?
They did once throw a pineapple in my face.
I would call that negative feedback. Yeah.
That's negative feedback.
Yeah, I think so.
They buried my surfboard and then once they disconnected the distributor of my car so I couldn't go home.
Oh, gosh. No. Well, that could have been because they wanted you to stick around.
They wanted my girlfriend to stick around.
Ah, okay.
There you go.
There was a wonderful documentary made about you called Accidental Icon. What did you think about someone making a documentary about you?
Well, I'm enjoying it now because now it's somewhat part of history because so many of the people that I surf with are not alive anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, Dale Velzy made my surfboards, the Kahuna character, you know, my friends. I'm a lone survivor, you know.
you're not just surviving, you're thriving.
Yeah, I'm thriving. Exactly.
Thriving.
All right, Kathy, let's get to the reason we brought you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the question that we asked of Andy. First, we wanted to know what nickname was given to Kathy Van Koner. That was the title of the books, movies, and TV shows that her father had started writing. Helen, what did Andy say?
Andy said Gidget.
And Kathy?
That's correct.
That is correct. Of course, it was Gidget. Next, we wanted to know what Los Angeles area city known for its beaches and waves was where Kathy surfed. Helen, what did Andy say?
Andy said Huntington Beach.
And I knew it should have been Malibu.
Well, Kathy, what was it, in fact?
It was Malibu.
It was Malibu. Sorry, was, no point there.
Yeah, and we didn't call it Surf Riders Beach. We called it the Boo.
The Boo. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, sorry, no point there. And finally, wanted to know what Australian, regarded as the most successful female surfer in history, also had that same nickname as Kathy. Helen, what did Andy say?
Andy said Lane Beachley.
And?
And correct.
That is correct for the point. Very good. What did you think about Kathy when you heard that Lane Beachley also had the nickname Gidget?
She's a lot better than the Taco Bell doggy.
That's true.
That was called Gidget.
Yes. Good point. I didn't ask you about that one. And you actually got to meet her as well. I saw you two together during that documentary.
I did. I got
That's
to
wonderful.
Meet her. Yes, it was.
Kathy, did you get a chance, opportunity to see Lane surf?
I did not get to see her surf, but I saw bits of her surfing in the documentary, but not in person, no.
She's bitching.
and my other friend is P.T. Townend. He's bitching too, and he's an Australian. I see him a lot.
Very cool. Nice one.
Kathy, it's been so wonderful for you to join us. If people want to find out more about you and what you're up to, is there a website or social media people can go to?
I think you can find me on Facebook, but you know, I don't do the Instagram or social media.
Got it.
You really are. I won't do the math and try to guess how old you are.
82.
Oh my God.
What?
Yeah, baby, 82.
I mean, I hope to be as vivacious as you are at 62 or 52. Yeah. Like, you're amazing.
I hope I'm as vivacious as you at 32.
So I have to. I'll tell you that Gidget, the novel Gidget's just been released in Germany. So now my picture graces bookstores in Germany, and it's being released in Spain and in Catalan. So now there's a Spanish Gidget.
Wow! I'm excited for the Germans to learn about Das Gidget.
Das Gidget. Yes.
Das Gidget.
Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. It's Kathy Zuckerman, the original Gidget. Thank you,
Aloha.
Kathy.
Aloha.
And mahalo.
And mahalo.
All right, Helen, what are our scores? We head into the final round.
At the end of that round, Steph Tisdell has 5 points and Andy Saunders has 8 points.
All right, now it is time for a final round we call Fast Facts. I'll read 10 statements and each contestant will answer with true or false. I'll start with Steph and alternate between each guest. Each correct answer is worth 1 point. Again, please answer each statement with true or false. Here we begin. Steph, there are parts of Australia called the Outback.
True.
Correct.
Andy, there is a chain of Australia-inspired steakhouses called Outback Steakhouse.
False.
Incorrect.
No, there really are. Steph, despite its inspiration, there are no Outback Steakhouse locations in Australia.
False.
Correct.
Andy, there are only 2 Outback Steakhouse locations in Australia.
False.
Correct.
Yeah, there are 7. Steph, the kids menu
at... There's 2 in my city.
Yeah. Steph, the kids menu at Outback Steakhouse in Australia is called the Joey menu.
True.
Correct.
Yes, Joey, of course, a baby marsupial like a kangaroo, koala, or wombat. Andy, the kids menu at Outback Steakhouse in America is also called the Joey menu.
True.
Correct.
Yeah, we have Joey's too. Steph, there's a specials menu at Outback Steakhouse in America called Aussie-tizers.
Oh, God, I bet that's true.
That is correct.
Yes, and I apologize. Andy, there's a specials menu at Outback Steakhouse in America called The Great Barrier Eats.
That has to be true.
It is absolutely true.
Again, I apologize. Steph, there's a cocktail at Outback Steakhouse in America called a Pina Koala.
True.
Correct.
Again, my apologies.
Embarrassing. Embarrassing.
Andy, there's a cocktail at Outback Steakhouse in America called a Wallaby Darned.
Oh.
As in, we'll all be darned.
False.
Correct.
Yeah. Steph, the Wallaby Darned is on the Outback Steakhouse menu in Australia.
False.
Incorrect.
No, it really is. Andy, and that's just one more reason why Australia is awesome.
True.
Correct.
All right, we're not going to count those last two. I want to thank Steph and Andy so much for joining us as Helen tabulates the final score. Helen, are you ready to announce today's winner?
I am. At the end of the game, Steph Tisdell has 10 points and Andy Saunders has 12 points.
A very nice comeback by Steph, but Andy, you are the facting champion on Go Fact Yourself. Andy, what will you do with your championship?
You know what? I always say it doesn't matter how you play the game or who you're playing. It's all about winning in life. You have to win. Okay.
So you're going to brag, it sounds like.
Yep. Just win.
Excellent.
At all costs.
At all costs. Excellent. It's always nice to beat your mentee in something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap things up by giving everyone here a chance to mention or promote anything that they're up to. Steph Tisdale, where can people find you and what you're doing?
On www.stephtisdale.com or on Instagram at Steph Tisdale Comedy. Tisdale spelled T-I-S-D-E-L-L. I've got a show on Amazon at the moment called Class of 07 that was great, was doing well in America, actually. It was number two in America for a couple of weeks. Definitely worth watching. We're desperately hoping to get a second season, so watch that. Otherwise, I don't know. I'll see you around. Chuck me a message or something.
Yeah. Did you say chuck you a message?
Yes.
Oh, I love that phrase. Yes.
Chuck me a message. Sorry.
No. We love. I love to learn new things. Well, thank you for chucking yourself here, Steph Tisdale. Andy Saunders, where can people find what you're doing?
Oh, you could follow on Insta, Andy and Deb. Also follow us, give us a chuck us, throw us, hurl us a follow on or a like on DNA of Design on YouTube. Also DNA of Design on Instagram. Myself, andysaunders.org, and Insta, Andy Saunders Comedy, also on Facebook. Andy Saunders Comedy. I am Dwayne Bennett on TikTok. I am Dwayne Bennett on Instagram. Yeah, follow me. Like Steph follows birds online.
Excellent. Well, we're so happy that both of you joined us all the way from Australia, Steph Tisdale and Andy Saunders. Ladies and gentlemen, my hosting partner is the lovely Helen Hong. Helen, where can people find you?
Hey, if you're in San Diego, I am performing at the Mic Drop Comedy Club on June 30th and July 1st. If you're not in San Diego, check out my comedy special, Well Hong, streaming on a bunch of different platforms.
Awesome.
Nice.
Helen Hong. And you can find me on Twitter at @J_Keith or on Instagram at jkeith.net, all spelled out. That just leaves me to thank Steph Tisdale, Andy Saunders, Dr. Irene Pepperberg, Kathy Zuckerman, and thank you for listening and supporting our show at MaximumFun.org. I'm J. Keith Van Stratton. Good night. Like what you hear? Come see us live. It's happening again. Go to GoFactorPod.com for our schedule and tickets. Meanwhile, please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all at GoFactorPod, update our wiki at GoFactorWiki.Fandom.com, and buy our T-shaped shirt and mug-shaped mug at MaxFunStore.com. And give us a great review on your favorite podcast platform, like Angie Logue did on Apple Podcasts. He, she, or they said, love. It's consistently funny and completely amazing to hear people show off their knowledge of their chosen topic. Thanks to Helen and Jay Keith for producing such a fun, interesting, and entertaining show. Aw, thanks, Angie Logue, for producing such a fun, interesting, and entertaining review. Helen?
Thank you, Angie Logue. Go Fact Yourself is a panel quiz program devised and produced by Jim Newman and J. Keith Van Stratton and comes to you via transcription from various homes across the world. Questions were compiled by the Trivia Industrial Complex. We are produced in collaboration with Maximum Fun. Maximum Fun senior producer is Laura Swisher. Associate producer and editor and possibly a koala is Julian Burrell. Our show engineer and possibly a kangaroo is Dave McKeever. Our theme song and incidental music were written and performed by Jonathan Green. Research assistance provided by Adam Nediff. Quiz assistance provided by Clint Tauscher and Brian Phillips. Promotional graphics by Erich Tran. Added support from Dave Bianchi and Christine Velada. Special thanks to Kylie Sparrow at A-List Entertainment, Dr. Linnea Newman, Joan Smeltzer, Kurt Carley, and Marvin Zuckerman. I've been Helen Hong!
Let's go to Australia!
And play the didgeridoo with a wombat!
Yes, that's exactly what we do when we go to Australia.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Wombat.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.